This is The Express with Gary Allen, your 360-degree view of the world. Now, here's your host, Gary Allen.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to The Express. Gary Allen with you on this Tuesday evening. I hope everybody's had a wonderful time since we spoke last, and I want to thank everybody for taking a few minutes out of your day to join us here tonight. We have an extraordinary guest, a young lady that, for all intents and purposes, if you don't have never heard of her, then you've been hiding under a rock somewhere. I mean, you have literally been hiding under a rock. Actually, my sister thought you were a jazz artist, but let me introduce you first. My guest tonight is Loretta Swit. She is probably one of the most iconic actresses that has ever been on television. She was on the most iconic show. This is the 45th anniversary of the TV show MASH. She played Major Margaret Houlihan. And I'm not going to get into the nickname because that's probably been rattled around the cage. She is a humanitarian. I'll tell you. I watched one of the episodes the other night. I just fell off the chair. She is probably one of the kindest, gentlest, biggest-hearted person I've ever known. We're going to talk about her book, Sweatheart, which is a beautiful adaptation of some of her artwork, pictures, all doing with the animal kingdom. She recently won the Betty White Award for Actors and Others for Animals. And we're going to get into some of the other awards. She has won the Emmy Award twice for her show on MASH. And I will tell you, we're not going to be able to get through every TV show, every theater production, every film she's been in. We're going to talk about some of the highlights. But it is my pleasure to welcome to The Express the iconic Loretta Swit. Good evening, Loretta.
Good evening. What a lovely, lovely tribute. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, I guess I found my mark and my place. So that's an inside joke, folks, before we went on the air. We're also on Facebook Live tonight. And Jeffrey Mark wanted me to tell you hello. So I'm saying
thank you, Jeffrey Mark. Yes.
So how does a girl from Passaic, New Jersey end up being an icon on national television?
You know, you can't strive for becoming an icon. You do is hard work. You in Passaic, New Jersey, as young as, I don't know what I was, is the first thought I had in my head that I wanted to be an actor. And I'm living my dream, so to speak. I just worked hard. I just wanted to be an actor and learn how to do it well. And you can go to school, develop a craft and work at it, hone it. And what happens after that is a side product. And no one could have, no matter how much of a Valentine of a dream you were having about your fate or your future, no one could have imagined the success that MASH would achieve. It's a phenomenon. So you can't, you don't dream about being a phenomenon. You just dream about getting a job, if you're an actor. You just want to work.
Right.
And when you work hard and you continue to develop, that's your reward. Everything else has been gravy. It's been, cream and cherry on tops. And, it's just a phenomenon.
Do you think your artistic talent from when you were 6 years old, when you started drawing and painting, do you think that that was the next thing was the crossover into being an actress, another artistic vent for you to allow yourself to grow and to stretch and to find out who Loretta Swit was?
Yeah, I never considered becoming an artist. And that's kind of a whole other story. I'll go straight to the acting part. My first job was as a page in a library, which means you had access to all the books as soon as they came out. And I, as well as my dad, was a consummate reader. And I was young enough not to need any sleep. So I would read practically all night. And I would hide under the covers with a lamp, you know, knock, knock, knock. We know you're reading in there. Put the light on and get some sleep. Yeah. And I would do all the characters in the books. I would then men, women, children, animals, whatever. And I would be doing this for myself. And during my first drama class, I realized that I had been rehearsing all my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what I was doing when I was reading. I was throwing myself into those roles. I was talking to myself, having conversations with all the characters that I was playing, and eventually playing a role like Shirley Valentine, where she mimics her husband, her children, her next-door neighbor. She's talking mm-hmm. to all these people. And I was doing that as a child. And so I think all my life, that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an actor. And the art never stopped, but I didn't take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And then one day I was just beginning MASH. My very, very dear girlfriend, Madeline Rue, wonderful actress.
Yes.
She and I were going to have dinner, and she was running late. So she said, "Have a seat. I'll be, 10 minutes." And she thrust this art book at me and said, "Here, amuse yourself." And so I began to draw something. And when she was ready to go out, I gave her the artwork, and she couldn't believe that I had done that in the 10 minutes I was waiting. And she said, "I can't, she had been studying art for years. And she said, I've been doing this all my life. She framed it and kept it.
Right.
And for the next holiday, which I think might have been Christmas or my birthday, maybe, I opened my door, and on the stoop there was a beautiful easel with a big red ribbon, because she wanted so much for me to start taking my artwork seriously.
That's
wonderful. She was the most extraordinary friend anybody could have. She was just the most generous, the most giving, kindest, and talented, beautiful. She was quite an artist herself. She did oils and acrylics, but she was very supportive and encouraging. I started to look at my artwork in a different way. It's like, really? It just took on a life of its own. If you, I think, give yourself up to something, do it well, you continue to grow, you learn, you continue to improve with each painting, you continue to learn. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me, because I've never studied professionally, which she would tease me about. She's like, "I hate you. If I didn't love you as much as I do, I hate you." She said, "I spent 6 months learning about light and dark, and you just sit down and do it." There's a lot of pleasure when you don't know what you're doing. You don't make any mistakes, because it's all
It's like nobody ever told me I couldn't. It's the same story in a sense that you have in a way with Leonardo da Vinci, who was my hero growing up. I mean, they wouldn't let him into the art schools because his mother and father weren't married. So he went out and he investigated and did things on his own. And of course, he's only accredited with like 15 paintings, I think, that really are his. When you began acting, who was Jean Frankel to you?
The best teacher. I mean, the most extraordinary man, my mentor. He was, the thing about Gene, he was very insightful. He had the gift of bringing you out of your insides. He nurtured what you had. He didn't believe you could give somebody an acting talent or teach them, but he could see what you had inside of you to offer, and he would find a way to bring that out of you, and that's a gift. He was the most gifted teacher, and he was a brilliant director, just a brilliant director. Again, for the same reason, he could see things in you and put you in touch with them so that you could do things that, whoa, I didn't know I could do that. So he was just wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, there's always that one person that encourages you to do things. You're listening to The Express, Gary Allen with you, my great guest, Loretta Swit from MASH and from her humanitarian endeavors. She is I guess the best way to describe you is you've been in love with the animal kingdom for a very, very long time.
Indeed. When I was in a stroller, my mom and dad used to tell me that my face would blow up like a little red balloon. I'd see a dog and I'd scream, doggy, 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 doggy. They thought I was going to explode. But yeah. I've always had a reaction and a love for animals. And as I got older, I saw a need, to speak for them.
Yeah.
And of course, I've always had lots of animals, lots of rescues.
Yeah.
And I have two left in my little household right now. I have a cat and a little Yorkie.
Well, I've got a cat.
Oh,
got a cat sitting right next to me. Her name is Princess, and she follows me around wherever I go, but she's always here for every show. She was a rescue. And then Furball, I rescued when I was living in Las Vegas. I was out there for 10 years as a performer, and he was wandering around the neighborhood, and suddenly one day he just plopped himself down, and he's been with me for, now 10 years. And
those are the best kind. It's the ones that pick you. They pick you.
Oh, yeah,
I love cats. I love animals. But Sahara, who's with me now, was the litter mate of my lovely Anubis. We lost Anubis January 31st this past year. It was tough. It was a very tough departure for us. He was very, very special, funny, clown, scamp, wonderful, wonderful cat. And he's gone now, and Sahara, who's quite different, but they both picked me. They were rescued. They were rescues. And as I walked down the aisle with the cages of rescues that I wanted to bring home with me, all of them, and I suddenly felt this pull at my sweater, and these little paws had come out from the cages. Yeah. And pulled me, pulled my sweater. So I looked at these two little faces. I said, "Oh, hi. Did you want me?" And they both went, "Ew." And I said, "Well, fine. Just say so." And I called the lady over and I said, "Can I have these two little monkeys, please?" And they got spayed and neutered and chipped and blah blah blah. And they've been with me. He was with me. My animals last a long time. They really function well with love and care. But Newbie, as Sahara's almost 18, and that's nice long life filled with love, And they've given me just everything. That's what they do. Animals give you everything.
There's
this wonderful saying. I'm sure you've heard it. I want to be the kind of person my dog thinks I am.
Absolutely.
They just adore us, and they inspire you to be better. I think.
I've always thought, Loretta, that animals were God's gift to us, and we need to nurture them and take care of them. Getting back to the acting for a moment. Over the years, while I lived in Los Angeles and for 2.5 years, I was a member of the Groundlings. Talking to actors on set of TV shows I did and et cetera. And I'm always not puzzled, but I always got information from them. And they always said that the best journey that you can be on as an actor is never stop learning. Every day is a lesson. If you pay attention, I studied some at Carnegie Mellon, and I did a number of episodes of St. Elsewhere, and I was working with William Daniels, who was one of my favorite actors of all time, from his musical 1776. I've practically met every actor that I could who was in that. And I remember saying to him after the end of the week, because I was done, and I said to him, you know, Mr. Daniels, in this week, I've learned more from you than I have learned from any acting teacher that I have ever had before. And he just looked at me, and when I said this to Ken Howard, Ken just laughed. He said, well, of course, my boy, you're working with the best. And if anybody out there knows William Daniels, he was one of the best. He really, really was.
Did you by any chance meet Anna White, who did, I think she did the choreography for 1776?
No, I never did.
You're talking about the musical, yes?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. The one that was on television. It was on Broadway forever. I saw it on Broadway, and then I saw the television, and every time it's on, I just love it. I mean, there's some liberties in there, but Ken Howard and I talked about it often. And he always used to say to me, Gary, you need to get out more if you're just watching 1776. But true to nature, that time period, for instance, if I had one actor I would love to meet, it would be Spencer Tracy. He did more without dialogue than any actor I've ever seen. Is there an actor for you?
So many actors have said that about Spencer Tracy. Harry Morgan's grandchild was named after him. I have quite a few actors that I love. A lot of them British. Very strangely. Well, I was reflecting on that for myself one day, and I thought, my God, they're all Brits. There are some actors who I worship and adore. They don't know this, and they're not necessarily big names. They're not necessarily famous, but I love their work. Mm-hmm. And also there are some that I've loved before they became big famous people, you know. I always used to feel that I discovered James Garner, you know, because I discovered him on Maverick. You know, I told everybody that he was, you know, going to be a big star. Michael Caine. From the first moment I saw Zulu. He had that direct, the connection, the magic. He just had it, and he shows us that in every piece of work he does. And he'll be in a turkey film. I mean, he's the only person who does films that are not necessarily great films, but he emerges from this film as the bright spot, the thing you go to see the film for. You go to see Michael Caine, you know.
Yeah.
And so,
Did you ever hear the interview that he did when somebody asked him, now that he's extremely successful, how does he pick a role? And this is a bad Michael Caine impression, but here it is. He says, well, I sit down with my scotch next to my table, and I open up the script. If my name is on the first page, okay. If my name is on the back page, I do it. If it isn't, the heck with it. that was what he said.
Yeah, well, he's certainly one of the world's unrecognized comics. He's a great raconteur. I mean, he can get going and tell you stories that you're on the floor laughing. And I have a very lovely, wonderful story about Michael. How we met, and that I absolutely cherish, that I would love to share with you.
Sure, go ahead. Margie Shepherd says to say hello to you.
Well, hello, Margie Shepherd.
She apparently you two know each other.
I know the name. I don't know from where her, but I know Margie Shepherd. I do.
Yeah, Margie's a dear friend of mine out in Las Vegas. She has her own soon-to-be television show, I think, is going to be happening very, very soon.
All right, Margie. Good, good. Mazel tov.
But go ahead.
Let me tell you, because it's I think, quite charming and very funny. I was doing a show on Broadway during my hiatus from MASH called Same Time Next Year. Now, in the end of the play, if you do, I'm sure you know the play. So in the end of the play, the actress playing Doris is asked the question it's sort of a statement from George. He says, I've loved you for 25 years and I know so little about you. I don't even know who your favorite movie stars are. And so she's, her back is to him and she's actually crying. She's sobbing. And she, through her tears, she names a list of favorite actors. Now, whoever's playing it can always pick their favorites so long as they end with Turhan Bey. Turhan Bey, for all the wrong reasons, gets a laugh and lifts the tension because it's a goodbye scene and you're crying. And so it makes everybody laugh. I eventually got to meet Turhan Bey, and I loved him growing up as a child with all the Alibaba movies. He was pretty to look at, and he was so not fully recognized for how good he was. So there you are. I'm on stage, and in a rehearsal, Gene Sachs was directing. He said, who are your favorite movie stars? So I said, I believe I said John Gielgud, Marlon Brando, and I said Michael Caine and Turhan Bey. So I got my laugh on the Turhan Bey, but I was doing a show and it was a celebrity oriented show. We all did little bits and pieces. It was in Las Vegas, as a matter of fact. And we were in this large green room, so to speak. And Michael Caine is at the opposite end of the room. He spots me and he comes over with a dash, a flourish, and points to me. He's pointing at me and wagging his finger and saying, you're the one who stands on the stage every night on Broadway and says, I'm one of your favorite actors. So he said it got back to him in London that this American actress every night announced that Michael Caine was one of her favorite actors. And so that's how we met. It's true. And I told him what the story and I told him the play and everything else. And that's how we got to know each other. And then I got to know his wife, Shakira. So they both said, don't forget, where we live now. And then we would go and spend some time together, spend holidays together. Michael is a gourmet cook. He's fantastic. He's a fantastic man. And, but I just, here I was meeting somebody I so admired, and he was in a way thanking me for being so kind about saying that. So it was quite lovely. It was wonderful.
You're listening to The Express, Gary Allen, with you. I have the wonderful Loretta Swit joining us here on The Express, and we thank you all very much for listening in. Loretta, one question to you that it's always, one actor told me he can tell the difference. You're theater trained. You also went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, as many of actors I worked with has. Can you tell the difference when you're working with someone who has a good theater background as compared to someone who does not?
Yes, in a way. Theater training, the really big difference is discipline. I mean, you really, the theater demands that you have extraordinary discipline. There's no stopping you on stage for another take. You can't blow lines. You can't. Yeah, I mean, you have to be there. You have to be there. You also have to be able to, in the case any number of parts that are played, you begin as one person, and there's an arc. You end differently, or else there's no play. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you go somewhere. The audience comes on a journey with you as you evolve. So, you have to have a very committed craft in order to do that, because you have to do it with their eyes on you. You can't take take five and go out, have a smoke, and come back. But I think mostly the difference is the discipline. Now, going to MASH for a second, we were all so totally trained in that way that you speak the same language. It's hard to describe that. It's also there are different demands. So you can be a wildly wonderful film actor, but you can't necessarily just drop that for a second and do a play. There are different demands, and I think that's not always easy to do for those icons, the film icons who have tried it, and those who are like, whoa, this is hard. It's just a little different. But my God, David Ogden Stiers can go off for a long weekend somewhere and do King Lear. Same thing with Larry Linville, Shakespearean train. These are all heavy theater background. Yes. All of us, you know.
Yeah, and, it's great training. And I was going to mention Larry, and I was going to mention David. I admired them both a great deal because when it came to Larry, anybody that can be the buffoon in the group is not stupid by any stretch of the imagination. They're very intelligent. And David, besides being a wonderful actor, was also a great narrator for a lot of Discovery Channel videos and films. And I would assume, like me, he probably read a great deal. I never got a chance to meet him. I did meet Larry once. But I will tell you that show gave me such great joy as a vet, I will tell you. The stuff that went on there, there were two people on that show that I got a hoot from every time they were on. One was the gentleman that played the psychiatrist, because he wasn't a psychiatrist.
Alan Arbus.
And my sister is a psychiatrist. And I sat one day and I said to her, I am going to go to him before I go to you. And she said, why? I said, because he's believable. And then the other guy that I got a hoot out of, only because I worked with him, and was the guy that played Colonel Black, the CIA guy. He was such a hoot.
No, Colonel Flagg. Colonel Flagg. You mean Ed Winter.
Yeah.
Ed Winter. Wonderful, wonderful actor. Now, you take that part. You really need to know what you're doing to make that part work. And he did. He was wonderful. We loved Ed. We lost Ed a few years ago. We've lost Ed. Yeah. Yeah, our numbers have dwindled. Alan Arbus is not with us any longer. Yeah, yeah.
David is gone. Roger, who I understand is one of Bob Hope's big investment advisors, which maybe a lot of people don't know. Wayne. Berghoff is still alive. Alan, Henry, unfortunately, is gone. First time I saw Henry Morgan on MASH, he played a general that came into the camp on some sort of court-martial deal.
That's correct. Harry Morgan. Henry had to change his name because there was another actor by the name of Henry Morgan. This is years, years, years ago. But he changed it to Harry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, Harry, oh boy, yes. He was in an episode called The General Flipped at Dawn. Yeah. And I tell you, there was some scene where he was so funny. We were having a tough time keeping a straight face. He was just McClane Stevenson kept breaking up. And Gary and McClane would look at each other and then lose it. I see them so clearly in my mind's eye. But what a collection of talent. I mean, it was just overwhelming, the talent that was rampant, running rampant in that 4077.
How many?
Yeah, we lost Wayne Rogers. We lost McClane was first to go. He was a big shock.
How many different endings did they tape when McClane left the show?
No, there was never anything but one ending. He was always going to be Gary coming in with the with a telegram that he had been shot down. That was only one ending. What you probably just want to confirm is it true that we were handed that last page as we walked onto the set? And yes, that's true. We didn't know what was going to happen. The reason they did that is so that, you know, we were going to be together for a week before we shot the tag. And they didn't want us all morose and hurting and aching, which we were anyway. I mean, I was devastated. I loved Mac. Mac called me Ma. Mm-hmm. He felt I was mothering. I was the nurturing mother of the group. And he would call me Ma. And he paid me great honors. He was our first actor nominated for a Golden Globe, and he asked me to collect it for him. And I was really quite thrilled about that because it gave me an opportunity to say wonderful things about him. You know, if you're accepting your own award, you say, I deserve this. It's wonderful. Yeah. I'm great. You know, you don't get a chance to say that. But if somebody else accepts your award, he or she can say, boy, you did this right. I kid, this guy is overwhelmingly talented, and you can go on and on about how great your friend is, you know.
Yeah,
so it was a great experience. Harry, of course, was the heart and soul of our group at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
It was losing him was terrible. But you know, we are very close family. David, for example, we knew he was ill. We were all of us were on top of that. We always know what's going on with each other. I mean, I just flew back from Los Angeles to see Mike Farrell get an award. I mean, we're always there for each other. It's really a family. Mm-hmm. It's not an effort. We just Wayne and I had this theory about why that happened. When we were shooting the pilot, it was freezing cold out at the Malibu Ranch where we did the exteriors, and we were there 5 in the morning. It was freezing. Wayne was blue. I mean, if your nose was running, you had like little icicles on your face. And so so we would huddle together for warmth. Yeah. I mean, really huddled. And so Wayne and I said, you had to become friends. You were so close physically. Immediately, you were keeping each other warm, and you became close, you know. And of course that's a small part of it, but people have said, when did you know you liked each other? And I said, I think pretty much from hello.
Yeah,
I think pretty much from the get-go.
Yeah.
The respect, I mean, we admired each other's work. And I mean, would somebody do a take, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and whoever it is, maybe look at me and say, how was that? Was that, did I get all the, you know? And I'd say, yeah, it was good. Or, do another one, you know, try blah, blah, blah. And, mm-hmm. and that's how we worked. I mean, we were always together. It was always, everybody was always watching everybody's back, so to speak. And that goes straight through from the assistant director, the camera operator, right through that crew, everybody had one goal, you know, to do the best possible thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so MASH, the show, emerged as the star, and it became this very extraordinary ensemble piece, and this orchestrated sound, but we called it a cacophony. It was more than beautiful music. It was more like, wow. You know?
Yeah. It was
like
crazy.
A cacophony of sound.
It was
it was a phenomenal experience. And I always, you know, we talk about it. I always end with, you had to be there. Yeah. And we were. It's hard to explain what happened to us, that day-to-day magic, and that when you're so close to people, you talk in stenography, or you don't have to finish a sentence, or you're just so totally bonded and doing the work.
As my mother would say, it's kismet. You're listening to The Express, yes. Gary Allen with you, and the wonderful, talented, I hope she'll come back sometime, Loretta Swit from the iconic television show MASH. We're talking about her acting career. I've got two final questions on your acting career, then we're going to get into this wonderful, beautiful book. Actually, two and a half questions. You worked with an actor that I adore to this very day, and when I was in New York, I tried to get on the set of Law & Order to meet him, and I never could get to meet him. Sam Waterston. Yes.
See, I beat you to it. And yeah. Funny, I before you even said Law & Order, my brain was, I bet it's Sam Waterston. Sam was so delicious. I worked with him in a wonderful movie. The movie was just terrific. It was called Games Mother Never Taught You. And, Sam and I were just, having a wonderful, wonderful time together. And I got ill one day, and I don't know whether it was a touch of the flu or after lunch, I lost my cookies. I had to be excused and regurgitated. And I was very ill, and I came back and I said to Sam, and we had kind of a loving scene coming up, and I said, Sam, you don't have to kiss me or anything. I don't know if I have a flu bug or something. And it was like, don't be ridiculous. Come over here. And I mean, he couldn't have cared less. He just, he was just absolutely wonderful. And then, we improvise well together, why don't we do this? That's funny or whatever. And, and we'd try it and do it, and it would work.
That's the one thing, Loretta, that I enjoyed about being a member of the Groundlings. It really gave me a good basic fundamentals of improvisation. And I was lucky enough in my class was Bob Saget, Kevin Costner, Barbie Benton, Nick Turturro. Now, they are all famous, and I'm just a talking head on a radio station, but I took it for a lot of reasons because I was also a stand-up comic. I was down the street at the Improv as an MC. Robin Williams was a really good friend of mine. Do you know what Robin used to read for pleasure?
I knew Robin slightly. He was such a deep, insightful thinking human
quantum
being.
Physics,
so I can only
books,
say
books on quantum right, physics. Right. Yeah.
Why am I not surprised? Yeah. I was going to say it would have to be reading that was a very interesting, deep thinking, nature. But
one question.
One
question I have for my producer: how did you enjoy meeting Prince Charles?
Oh, he was a bit of a flirt, actually. I enjoyed it. This was way before Diana, this is very cute. They turned themselves inside out for the prince. We went to the commissary, which was sort of redecorated like this big dining room, and there was a dais, and I was sitting one removed, I guess, next to his bodyguard or something, and there was Charles. And when we were introduced, he picked up my dog tags and kind of pulled me closer to him with the dog tags, by my dog tags, which made me giggle. It was cute. He was very sweet, very friendly, very nice. But my funny story about that, I, at that point, was so terribly television oriented. I walked up on the dais and there's place cards and who am I sitting next to? And it says Mr. Grant. And I thought, oh, how nice. Ed Asner. I adore him. Thinking Lou Grant instead of Cary Grant.
Cary Grant.
I guess I looked up and there is Cary Grant headed towards me and he's going to be sitting next to me. And I just could not believe that. I thought it was going to be Ed Asner. So, and Ed is a dear friend. I love him very much. And I told the story to Ed, and he looked at me and said, "Oh, you must have been so disappointed."
Oh, that is so beautiful. Before we start getting into the book, Loretta, before we get into the book, what is the best advice you got as a young actress, and what advice do you pass on to young actors today?
It's not an easy road. It's not an easy business. You have to want to act. You have to want to perform, get on stage or in front of a camera more than anything else in the world. You have to have what Gene Franklin and I used to call it, a fire in your belly. It has to be, I hate to say dramatically, a life or death thing, but it has to be so meaningful that you can't even consider doing anything else. This is what you have to do. You just have to do it. And you don't dream about where. You don't have to have these lofty goals. You want to perform, and you don't care if it's in an attic or a basement or it doesn't matter. What matters is the work and how well you're going to do it and how well you continue to develop. And that's all that matters. Now, if you're willing or not willing, if you feel that way, then yes, go for it. Go for it, because the journey itself will be your reward.
Yeah.
Not the money that you may make or the success you may have. The journey itself towards performing, towards not perfection. There's no such thing when you're performing. You can always be better. You can always, always be better. But the journey of enlightenment, really, how to get better, what would work better. And, you know, the reason we go to dailies is to see how much better we can make it. Was it good? Why wasn't it good? What was wrong with that moment? How can I make that better? And it's for tomorrow, you know, to get better tomorrow. And if that's the kind of life you want to have, that kind of fire in your belly, then great, go for it. If there are any other reasons, I think it's a long, torturous road.
Yeah.
You know, if there's some other reason that is not as ambitious or pure, or you have to really want this bad. What I teach master classes, and I always tell my students that if you even entertain a fallback or doing anything else, then do it. Because the field is always crowded. You have young people coming in from all over the states every day, younger and more vivacious, more prettier, handsomer, whatever. You have constant flow of new people. And they are younger than you're not going to be again, and so forth and so on. So you have to attack that with the idea that this is the life you want to lead. It may not have you end up on stage accepting an award. Somebody may not ever recognize how good you get. Mm-hmm. You know, your exposure won't include that, but you will know if that's good enough for you. If you're looking for the ultimate satisfaction of what you can accomplish with your craft, then you're home. Then you're a winner. Then you've won because you've had this tremendous journey and tremendous satisfaction.
We're talking to Loretta Swit here on The Express. Gary Allen with you. We are now going to talk about one of the most wonderful parts about Loretta Swit, and that is her humanitarian endeavors. She won the Woman of the Year by both the Animal Protection Institute and the International Fund for Animal Welfare, the Advocate for Farm Animal Award in 2007, She also has Compassion for Action Award. The Westminster Animal Welfare and Leadership Award, the International Red Cross Humanitarian Award, the Global Wildlife Conservation Champion Award. That is for the African Conservation Fund. The Betty White Award, which it doesn't probably get any higher than that for actors and others for animals. She has also been, she won two Emmy Awards, the People's Choice Awards, the Gene Award, the Silver Satellite Award, the Gene Golden Halo Award, and the Pacific Broadcasters Award. Oh, your mantle is full.
Forgive me, and that's lovely. And yes, each of those are very, very important and truly overwhelming. The Sarah Siddons Award from Chicago, it's Chicago's highest theatrical honor. And what's wonderful about this award, I think, is that you have no idea you're even being considered. There's no campaigning for it. There's just you get a phone call and it announces, they tell you that you have been chosen for the Sarah Siddons Award.
Yeah. You won that award. You won that award the year that I was still living in Chicago. I was still
Yeah,
I was in the Attorney General's office then, and you won the award that year.
What a great theatrical city that is. Oh. So I just was overwhelmed, really stunned by that. The award used to be Brass, but one year it was given to Bea Lilly, and if she fell on the stage when they gave it to her, it was so heavy. You know, she was like this little, slight little petite creature, and she just got the award and fell with it. So they've changed it. It's a kind of resin jeweler's mix. I don't know what, but it's a gorgeous, gorgeous award. It's a muse, an actress playing a muse, I would say. In Renaissance or Victorian, Victorian. She's an actress sitting on a seat, I'm going to say a throne, a kind of a throne seat, and she's meditating, she's working, she's getting prepared with this role, you know, and it's a beautiful actor's award, you know, it looks like an actor. And originally it was only given to women. It was, and now I think they have included men as well. But it's a great, great honor. It's an evening of, it's just really quite wonderful. And, breathtaking. So
with the 10 minutes,
you know All About Eve. Do you remember the All About Eve is a total flashback from getting the Sarah Siddons Award. They're giving the Sarah Siddons Award to Eve, and Bette Davis is in the audience chomping on celery and spinning, and you know. But that's the award that I'm talking about. But anyway.
With the 10 minutes that we have left, let's talk about Sweatheart, which is a watercolor artistry and animal activism book that you've put together along with Miles Hora, I believe is her name.
He was the publisher.
It's
published by Ultimate Symbol. I put the book together, but that's okay.
I understand the reason all the proceeds from the book go to help animal rights groups all around the world. But what was the idea? Who gave you the idea to put this all together? Was it something you decided to do with all your artwork and beautiful photographs? By the way, I love animals of all types. I collect Native American art, so I'm a little partial to bison. I'm a little partial to bison, thanks to Mr. Costner, who got me hooked on this stuff. But reptiles are not my favorite form of animal kingdom. Every time I look at a snake, it reminds me of my late mother-in-law. It really does.
Ooh, not very kind.
No, she wasn't either, you know. Talk about the book and all the good stuff that has come from the book.
Yes. It is the most wonderful happening for me. It's like coming full circle in a way, combining my artwork for such a good cause. I mean, it doubles back into that. The most of the portraits in the book, as you know, are of animals, and the sale of the book, as well as all the prints you can buy, or even the originals, or, I mean, I've been commissioned. So all of that goes back into animal work and the saving, placing, whatever. I'll tell you about our current project. But so it's fabulous that this full circle has come around in the form of a book and in the form of another artistic way of expressing myself, stage, film, whatever. Here we have my watercolors, and so it's great. And very often now, if I'm doing regional something, they will offer my books in the lobby. I will do book signings. So it's mm-hmm. all of one page in my life, so to speak. It's mm-hmm. all connected. And right now, I have a project that I call Comrades in Arms, and I'm working with military folk and other humane organizations to bring back from Afghanistan the canine teams together.
Oh, yes.
And also to bring back as many of the dogs that are still there to come back. Not only because they belong home after a long tour of duty, but because we have vets here, retired, who want them, who want to be bonded to a service dog. And mm-hmm. that dog still has a lot of love and care to give that serviceman. I did a painting of a dog called Charlie Brown, and retired vet in a wheelchair was looking for a service dog companion. Mm-hmm. And he saw Charlie Brown, and he's quoted as having said, "I knew he was for me. The moment I looked at him, that was going to work." And so I have pictures of him with Charlie Brown, and I did a painting of Charlie Brown. It's going to be in book two. I'm working on my second book, mm-hmm. my second mm-hmm. watercolor book. And so it's, I'm involved here. You hear me talking about the military. Mm-hmm. And so it's my MASH connection and so forth. And I think it's just humanity. I've come full circle with those things that have made me whole, have made me pull together what I can give back, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm really happy with the way that's going. As we speak, I'm getting ready to pack to go to Sarasota. Very veteran, military oriented. And I'm going to be doing a big book signing, and probably be chatting with some military to see how we're going to connect on bringing those animals back and the teams. I have a centerfold that I met at the Emmys. Mm-hmm. My dear Chris Van Etten and his dog Harley. Now Chris lost both his legs in Afghanistan. It was on a night maneuver, which dogs do not participate in. And he suffered terribly. And the medic with him, near him, had his medical bag destroyed also in this action. So Chris, having lost his legs, was without morphine for quite some time. There was no medicine. So I say this because there was inordinate suffering involved.
Yeah.
He was sent home without Harley. And he and the military worked 7 months to get Harley back. And he said to me, "I think those 7 months were the most painful ones I had waiting for my partner, waiting for Harley. No, he says this. That's why I say that the pain that he endured in Afghanistan, he still says, waiting for that dog that he's so bonded with. And I mm-hmm. was with them both. I mean, Harley never takes his eyes off Chris. I mean, they're just... Yeah. And Chris just became a daddy. So this is all a very, very happy story. But I call Chris my centerfold because I'll be bringing him in to some of my fundraisers so that he mm-hmm. can talk to people and tell them how important it is, their dollars and cents, to help us bring back those dogs, bring back those teams together. Mm-hmm. And dear President Obama had appropriated funding for this. It's not a one-way ticket. We right. sent them out there to do a job. It's a round trip. They've got to come back together. And, you know, in many cases, if, let's say, the gentleman, the man, the soldier is killed in action, very often the family wants to have that dog, wants mm-hmm. to have that piece of him back. And, you know, but I've seen pictures that just melt your heart. I've seen mm-hmm. I've seen a service dog, or I should really call him battle buddy, sleeping like a blanket over his partner. It's fantastic what they do and what they yeah. do together, and what these two people these two guys. And they are guys. A lot of the ads say this is not just a dog. This is a soldier. This is a soldier.
Oh yeah.
And the response, of course, when I talk about this, is enormous. And I'm going to be once again participating in the Veterans Day parade in Phoenix, and. My contact in there said, you know, we're going to get a Second World War ambulance to put you in for the parade. And she said, we expect 45,000 people there to see you. Mm. And I said, you know, I have an idea. I don't want to sit in your ambulance. I want to walk in the parade. Mm-hmm. And I want two vets with me. And we will go from one side of the street to the other. And I want a dollar from anybody who comes to that parade to see me. I'll shake their hand, give them a hug. I want a dollar. And if I can come home with 45,000 $1 bills, I can bring back a few teams and certainly mm-hmm. a few dogs. And that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do from that parade. What do you think? And she said, I love it. so she went to the board and they said, we love it. So,
Loretta, I hate to say this, but we are out of time. This has been an exciting time, not only for me to finally meet you. I hope you'll come back at some other time to come on and talk about your artwork and your days in MASH. By the way, I want to wish a happy birthday is not too far down
November,
the line.
That's right.
You and I are both Scorpions. Mine is in October.
Ah.
And
what date is your birthday?
October 25th for me.
Wow. Coming up soon. Happy birthday.
Thank you. But I want to thank you so much for joining us here on The Express. You are a delight. We have had the pleasure, folks, of having one of the most iconic actresses and one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, Loretta Swit, here for the last hour on The Express. And I want to thank all of you out there for taking the time to join us here. And EW back in the studios. He's been great tonight, as always. A great producer. I got to say it on the air. He's a great producer. And I just want to thank all of you for taking the time to join us here on The Express. We'll be back next week with another show. Until then, please take care of yourselves and each other.
You've been listening to The Express with Gary Allen. Join us here every Tuesday night at 10 for more captivating talk with Gary Allen. See you next time on The Express.